participants have been muted.
Good evening, everyone. This is Linda Hahn, and I apologize for all of the difficulties we've encountered this evening. This is not our fault from the AAUW National Office side. It's our conference calling service, and you can be assured that I will be discussing this incident with the conference calling service tomorrow morning. So, good evening, and I welcome you each to the AAUW post-election conference call. Tonight, we'll have an opportunity to talk about this historic election and what the results mean for AAUW's policy agenda moving forward. Just so you know, we are recording this call so that it will be accessible and available for all members to go in and listen to at any given time after the fact. So those that weren't able to be on the call or gave up because of our own problems here will be able to listen to it. A few housekeeping notes first. Because of the large number of participants, we won't be able to take questions over the phone. Indeed, to prevent the interference of background noise, such as barking dogs and crying children, your phone lines have been muted. Some questions have been emailed in ahead of time, and we will do our best to address those. If a question occurs to you during the call, please email us at voteredaaaw.org. That's V as in Victor, O-T-E-R-E-D, at aaw.org. My colleagues and I are monitoring the email tonight. We'll respond to any email questions we receive at the end of the call as time permits. We plan to keep the call to just about an hour. Also, after the call, you may still email or call us with more questions. Staff will be available on the phones during normal business hours tomorrow, so feel free to call the policy shop at 202-785-7793. That's 202-785-7793, or simply email your question. There will be three additional speakers joining me on the call tonight. They are all members of AAUW's public policy team. Lisa Matz is here as our Director of Public Policy and Government Relations. She is AAUW's top policy advisor and develops comprehensive strategies to advance our priority issues on Capitol Hill through the executive branch in coalition with other organizations and, most importantly, to mobilize AAUW members. Seth Chase is here, and he is our department's field director. He plans and manages AAUW's voter education and turnout campaign, as well as grassroots advocacy on AAUW's public policy priorities, including e-advocacy and grassroots lobbying to policymakers. And Tracy Sherman is the government relations manager at AAUW. She develops effective legislative strategies that advance our policy priorities on Capitol Hill, working with congressional offices and coalition partners to develop legislation that advances equity for women and girls. Now, before we get to their comments, just a brief recap of this week's election. As we all know, Barack Obama defeated John McCain to become the first African-American president of the United States. Once again, women made the difference in the outcome. Obama won 56% of the women's vote versus 49% of the men's vote. Youth voters ages 18 through 29 also had an enormous impact on this election, making up 18% of the total electorate, even outpacing the powerful senior bloc, age 65 and over, who made up 16% of the voting bloc. Women as candidates largely did well on Tuesday, picking up seats in Congress and in state houses across the country. In one extreme but noteworthy example, women won a majority of the state Senate seats in New Hampshire, making it the first legislative body to be dominated by women in the history of the United States. For the governors, the Democrats picked up one governorship, with the final tally standing at 29 governor's mansions for the Democrats, 21 for the Republicans. Beverly Perdue, the Democrat from North Carolina, was the only new woman governor elected in 2008. Perdue joins Christine Gregoire, who is a Democrat from Washington State, who was reelected in a rematch of her close race from 4 years ago as the only woman to win gubernatorial races this year. With six female governors already safely in office, the total number of female governors in 2009 is 8, 5 Democrats and 3 Republicans. For the U.S. Senate, when the 111th Congress convenes in January 2009, it looks like the Democrats will hold at least 55 seats, as well as 2 independents who caucus with the Democrats. The Republicans will maintain at least 40 seats, but races in 4 states are still in question: Alaska, Georgia, and Minnesota. 17 women, 13 Democrats, and 4 Republicans will serve in the U.S. Senate, besting the record of 16 set by the current Congress. This record includes the 4 women, 3 Democrats, 1 Republican, who won Senate elections this year, including 2 incumbents and 2 challengers: Kay Hagan, Democrat of North Carolina, and Jean Shaheen, Democrat of New Hampshire, both beat well-known incumbents and will join Susan Collins, who's the Republican from Maine, who was reelected in a rare bright spot for the Republicans. Incumbent Elizabeth Dole, the Republican of North Carolina, lost her race to Hagan. In the House of Representatives, as for the House, the Democrats improved their majority by at least 22 seats, with a current split of 254 to 173 for the Republicans. There are 8 races that still have outcomes in question. 2 women candidates are in these contests that are too close to call: Darcy Berner, the Democrat from Washington, who is challenging an incumbent, and Mary Jo Kilroy, the Democrat from Ohio, who is seeking an open seat. A total of at least 74 women, 57 Democrats, 17 Republicans, will serve in the 111th Congress, setting a new all-time high. 10 new women, 8 Democrats, 2 Republicans, will join the 64 incumbents, 49 Democrats and 15 Republicans, who were reelected, topping the previous record of 71 women set this Congress. The women newcomers include 5 challengers, 4 Democrats and 1 Republican, who defeated incumbents, and 5 winners of open seats, 4 Democrats and 1 Republican. Now, let's take a moment to hear from Field Director Seth Chase about AAUW's activities this election season.
Thank you, Linda. AAUW members contributed to this election in 2 important ways. One, you succeeded in getting candidates in this election to campaign on issues of concern to women and girls. And 2, your outreach to women contributed to this record voter turnout. AAUW's priority issue, pay equity, was campaigned on by candidates for Congress in several races. But most notably, it was an issue campaigned on by President-elect Obama. That didn't just happen. Candidates campaigned on pay equity because AAUW released research that changed the debate on the pay gap, and AAUW women made it clear to elected officials that equal pay for equal work is a priority for them. That was the result of much grassroots advocacy by AAUW members who held programming and actions for Equal Pay Day in April earlier this year, and held candidate debates and forums in the run-up to Election Day at which they asked about pay equity and other issues. Now that the election is over, President-elect Obama has assured us that pay equity is a top priority for his administration and has committed to push Congress to pass a good bill quickly. Hundreds of AAUW branches implemented programming to educate women about the issues in the campaign that would affect them the most and to turn women out to vote. Guidance for planning voter education and turnout programming was provided to branch leaders in AAUW's Woman-to-Woman Voter Turnout Manual, which was updated and re-released earlier this year. I want to highlight just a few outstanding examples of voter education and turnout programming implemented by AAUW branches this year. The North Hills McKnight branch in Pennsylvania organized a turnout campaign this fall, targeting over 1,000 drop-off women voters in their community. They made 2 rounds of phone calls to each of the women they targeted. The first calls were made at the beginning of October to offer a voting guide, applications for absentee ballots, information about polling places, and transportation to the polls. Follow-up calls were made within the week before the election day to encourage them to vote. Similarly, the Greater Naples branch in Florida also conducted a direct voter contact campaign prior to their state's primary elections. They targeted 2 precincts in their area with historically low voter turnout and placed calls to more than 1,000 drop-off women voters urging them to vote. The AAUW San Jose branch in California held a forum on ballot measures and and reviewed the pros and cons of the 20 different measures that would be on their local ballot. Numerous branches held candidate forums and debates that included offices such as U.S. Representative, state legislators, and county commissioners and city council members and school board members. AAUW members were also active in campaigning on ballot measures in several states. Five states were targeted by a coordinated campaign to end affirmative action state by state. AAUW members in Oklahoma, Missouri, and Arizona were instrumental in the successful campaigns to keep these ballot measure initiatives off the ballot in their states. Women have been the primary beneficiaries of affirmative action. AAUW supports affirmative action programs that establish equal opportunity for women and minorities and encourage diversity in educational institutions and in workplaces. Affirmative action has opened a lot of doors for women that would be shut if ballot measures such as these were to pass. AAUW members also campaigned against similar measures in Nebraska and Colorado, the two states where it did make the ballot this year. The AAUW of Nebraska State Board committed to each branch educating their own members about the value of affirmative action and expanding opportunity for women and the impact that the ballot measure would have if it passed. Similarly, in Colorado, every branch held a meeting to educate their members about the ballot measure. Your national organization contributed to these efforts, sending AAUW field staff to each of those two states to train leaders there in voter education and turnout. AAUW also mailed postcards delivered just days before the election to all members in each state, plus several thousand other women urging them to vote against these anti-affirmative action ballot measures. Unfortunately, the measure passed in Nebraska, but it was defeated in Colorado. AAUW members in South Dakota campaigned against a ballot measure that would have banned abortions in most instances, similar to a measure rejected by voters there in 2006. AAUW also mailed postcards to members there and several thousand other women, encouraging them to vote against the measure. Finally, for ballot measures, AAUW mailed postcards to women in the city of Milwaukee, urging them to vote for a measure requiring employers to provide a minimum number of paid sick days. That measure passed. AAUW also prepared voter guides on three House races and 15 Senate races. These voter guides are posted to the AAUW website and emailed to Action Network subscribers. Printed voter guides on three of the Senate races were mailed to members and other women in Minnesota, New Hampshire, and North Carolina. And I'll hand it over to Lisa Matz.
Hi, everybody. This is Lisa Matz. It's my pleasure to be your Public Policy and Government Relations Director. Thanks so much for your patience today. But we're AAUW members, so we know we can deal with anything, even if it's a little technological issue. I'm going to talk just real briefly about the game of musical chairs that's going to be happening in our nation's capital in the next several weeks. Obviously, we have a new Congress that's been elected. We have a new administration. And because of the policies of that new administration, we're going to be seeing, I think, some pretty big changes here in Washington, D.C. And I don't mean just policy-wise. I mean literally in terms of structure and where various politicians will be hanging their hats as far as their offices go. Let me start. Part of the reason for that, obviously, is because one of the things that the Obama administration has said is that they do not want to have lobbyists, registered lobbyists, in the White House. They have not said they won't necessarily have them in the cabinet agencies, but they certainly would like to avoid having registered lobbyists. And so one of the things that we know is going to be happening is that more than has ever happened in the past, this administration is going to be drawing from current members of Congress and the Senate, as well as House and Senate staffers, to fill the White House, as well as to populate the various cabinet agencies going around in town. So part of what we're going to be looking at here is how that's going to work. Starting with the Senate, the leadership there on the Democratic side, we expect to stay the same. Harry Reid from Nevada will still lead the Democrats. Mitch McConnell won a squeaker in Kentucky, and he will continue to lead the Republicans. Mitch McConnell, in particular, is a very savvy politician, and I think despite the losses that the Republicans took, won't have any trouble maintaining his leadership post. He's quite good at what he does. The other thing we're going to be seeing are some committee chair round robins, quite frankly, and it's all about Senator Kennedy from Massachusetts. As many of you know, Senator Kennedy has been sick with brain cancer, and so there are lots of questions about what role he's going to be playing in the next Congress. We know he's coming back here in November for their organizing meetings and for the lame duck session. But is he really going to be up to being the HELP chair, the chair of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee in the Senate come January? And will he want to be, or will he want some specific select role that just focuses, for instance, on health care reform, which is his true love? So if that happens, all kinds of different domino effects could come into effect in terms of where various senators could sit. Next in line at the HELP committee is Senator Dodd. Of course, Senator Dodd from Connecticut is actually currently also chairing the banking committee, which, as you all know, given the current economic issues, is a pivotal role. Is he going to be willing to give up banking? What happens at foreign relations? Senator Biden, obviously now the new president or vice president-elect, will be leaving that role. We're going to have a new chair at foreign relations. That is something that I think is also going to potentially be an issue because Mr. Dodd has a role there. What's going to happen in terms of some of the other senators that may be selected to go to cabinet positions? We've heard rumors about Senator Kerry, perhaps, as Secretary of State. That would affect the Small Business Committee, which he currently chairs. So you can see all throughout the Senate, one of the things that's going to be very interesting to watch is who ends up with cabinet positions or other executive-level positions within the new administration and how that then affects naming new senators for anybody that might need to resign their post as a result, as well as what happens to their vacant committee posts. All of this obviously has a huge impact in terms of AUW's legislative agenda, in terms of what we will need to do as your lobbying staff in building relationships with new staffers on the Hill who might be covering new issues, but also in terms of what those particular committee chairs might have as their personal agendas for their new roles in the committee. So all of this is still playing out. We don't really have a crystal ball that we can tell you exactly what's going to happen. But all of this, I think, is going to be very exciting in the next several days. When it comes to the House, the leadership, I think, on the Democratic side will probably remain the same. Obviously, we have Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Hoyer. What will be different, obviously, is Conference Chair Rahm Emanuel has today accepted the position of Chief of Staff for President-elect Obama, and so he will be leaving, and we will need to make sure that that position is filled. Obviously, also on that side in Illinois, we won't just have a vacant House seat. We're going to have a vacant Senator seat as well, and so someone needs to be appointed to fill Barack Obama's vacant slot as well. On the Republican side, we actually have already seen some leaders on the House side take the fall, I think, is a good way to put it. Already, Putnam from Florida, as well as Blunt from Missouri, have said that they will not stay on as whip and as conference chair. There is some talk that Eric Cantor might be the next conference chair for the Republicans. Jeb Hensarling and Jack Kingston are also people that are being talked about to be the next whip on the Republican side. What remains to be seen is if John Boehner, who is the minority leader on the House side, will be able to preserve his position despite the heavy losses that the House Republicans took. So again, we could see some new faces, some new ways of doing business because of this musical chairs. And then, of course, we have committee issues there as well. Lest you think that the Democrats are going to be one big happy family with their new and large majority, think again. We've already seen today Waxman from California challenging John Dingell for chairmanship of the Energy and Commerce Committee. Waxman is already chair of Government Reform and Oversight. Of course, he would have to give that up. But the fact that he's making an outright challenge shows that, again, within the Democratic caucus, there's definitely going to be some power jockeying and negotiations going on when they come back later on this month. In terms of the new administration, the transition team has been appointed. John Podesta, who was chief of staff with the Clinton administration, as well as Valerie Jarrett, a real estate executive who's an Obama friend, and Pete Rouse, who is the chief of staff for Senator Obama in the Senate, have all been tapped to chair that transition. The cabinet positions, I think, truthfully, the cabinet secretary positions, are probably going to be named within the next 7 to 10 days. This is something that's going to happen pretty quickly. Most transitions can take all the way through summertime, but it looks like this is going to be one of the faster transitions we've seen, at least for the top agency positions. And I think a lot of people feel like this is a really good idea to move quickly. They've been planning for this already. It seems like the Bush administration actually is one of the better prepared administrations in terms of handing off the baton, so to speak, so that's going to make things better as well. And as I said, I expect the cabinet secretaries to be named very quickly, and then they will move on to the deputy and undersecretaries as quickly as possible. So the Treasury Secretary is probably likely one of the first ones, obviously, again, because of the economic situation. AEW does have a few concerns in terms of Mr. Summers because of some comments that he's made about women in science and girls' abilities to do math and so on and so forth, and we're addressing those as appropriate. He's certainly one of the names that's on the list, as well as Paul Volcker, and the gentleman who also heads up the New York Fed is on the short list as well. Let me go ahead and stop there. That's basically kind of the lay of the land in terms of the musical chairs that's going to be taking place. Important note for all of you to know, AEW is actually has actually hired a regulatory affairs manager to add to our public policy staff, and this person is essentially going to be an executive branch lobbyist that will help us in terms of building relationships with the new administration, making sure that we have appropriate channels open to the various cabinet-level agencies and the Offices of Civil Rights and the Department of Labor Women's Bureau and so on and so forth, the places that we need to have a voice to make sure that we can move the mission forward, not just through Congress but through the executive branch as well. So that's one other strategy that we will be employing in this new world that we're faced with here after Tuesday. With that, let me hand it over to Tracy Sherman, who's going to talk initially here about some opportunities for AEW's public policy priorities here in the new Congress.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm going to start with education. In this new Congress and with the new administration, AUW will work to improve No Child Left Behind. I don't have to say everyone knows this is a controversial law. It's been up for reauthorization actually for over a year now. The talk around town is that it will probably be reauthorized by Congress in 2010. Everyone agrees that the current law isn't working, but it's much more difficult to reach consensus on what the new authorization and new law would actually include. I'm just going to highlight some of our priorities for No Child Left Behind reauthorization. One is to improve science, technology, engineering, and math education that girls would receive, and also that underrepresented populations in these fields would receive. We'll also work to ensure that provisions from the America Competes Act are funded. This is the bill that Congress passed, this Congress, I guess, technically still here, which works to improve this type of education and also U.S. global competitiveness in terms of technology in these fields. In No Child Left Behind reauthorization, AUW will also have the opportunity to pass policies to prevent bullying and harassment in schools. We're optimistic about these provisions becoming law. A discussion draft that was released actually in 2007 by the House Education Committee included provisions to prevent bullying and harassment of students. And in addition, there's also a very broad coalition supporting these provisions. Also, in addition to No Child Left Behind reauthorization, we have the opportunity to improve career and technical education and job training that people receive, and there's especially an opportunity now given the decreasing economy and the increasing unemployment. This will definitely be on Congress's radar screen in addition to the administration's radar screen. Obviously, everyone on the call probably knows the AUW preserves and tries to enforce Title IX. This is the law that prohibits sex discrimination in education programs that receive federal funding. Probably also may not come to a surprise to many people on the call that the current administration, the Bush administration, has weakened Title IX in several different ways. However, we're very optimistic and hopeful because Obama is a big supporter of Title IX and has actually publicly stated that numerous times. So we have a huge opportunity here to work with Congress to pass different legislation to enforce Title IX and expand on a couple things that would help improve the law. In addition, working with the Department of Education to fix some of the things that the Bush administration did, which I will expand on here. One is we will work to repeal the 2005 Title IX Prong 3 clarification. Schools get to pick one of three ways that they want to comply with Title IX in regards to athletics. In 2005, the administration issued a clarification that would require schools to only send a spam email survey to their female students to see if they're meeting female students' interest in athletics. That's what prong three requires, meeting students' interests. So obviously AUW has concerns that we're trying to uphold a civil rights law by using spam email. This obviously jeopardizes a number of athletic opportunities available to women and is an extremely questionable, to say the least, way of trying to enforce a law. So AUW will work with the Department of Ed to rescind this clarification and return to the previous standards, which would require that if schools decide to use prong three and try to show that they're meeting female interest in athletics, that they actually consider multiple factors, and this is what the rule was before 2005, such as coaches' opinion, number of athletes, and the high schools that feed into the college, that sort of thing. In addition, we will also work to rescind the 2006 single-sex education regulations. These regulations that the Department of Ed issued actually allow for the exclusion of students from classes based on gender. In addition, schools do not have to meet civil rights laws when they choose to do this. So again, obviously AUW has extreme problems with this, these regulations. So we'll work to rescind these regulations and actually to also issue guidance to schools as to what's allowed under the law, under the pre-2006 regulations, and what's not. In addition, AUW has been working for several years on legislation to require high schools to report basic data on the number of female and male athletes that they have in their athletic programs and the expenditures made for those sports teams. We can do this a couple of ways. One is passing legislation, or the other is working with the Department of Education to require this. Currently, schools collect this data, but it's not publicly available, so students, parents, communities don't actually know what's happening in their community. We do know that overall, however, girls receive 1.3 million fewer opportunities to play high school athletics than male athletes. Just very quickly, in terms of higher education, we had a great year in the 100, or I'm sorry, a great Congress in the 110th Congress. We passed a number of different bills to fund education, higher education, make it more affordable. This included the Patsy Mink Fellowship Program, which AUW has been working for on for years, that would provide fellowships to women and minorities who want to become college professors. In addition, I probably don't have to say, with the tightening loan market and financial crisis, there is concern about continued access to student loans. So we will be working with the Department of Ed and Congress to ensure that students have access to student loans even during an economic downturn like this. So real quickly, that wraps up education, and I'm just going to say a couple things about reproductive rights. There is now an opportunity to pass prevention legislation and to fund comprehensive sex education programs and also international family planning programs. Many of these have bipartisan support in Congress in addition to the new administration support. Many of you have probably seen our emails and heard about the proposed new Department of Health and Human Service regulations. These are expected to be finalized really any day now. The current administration is expected to finalize them, even though the new incoming Obama administration has publicly said that they would almost immediately, if not literally on the first day, overturn these regulations. Just to give people a little information about them, the proposed regulations that we expect to be finalized would dramatically expand the types of services that providers can refuse to perform, such as counseling, information about health care options, even access to birth control. In addition, this regulation is completely unnecessary because current law, Title VII, actually already balances employers' need to accommodate employees' religious beliefs and practices with the needs of people that the employer serves. So these regulations really upset this balance and don't take into any consideration for actually the needs of someone trying to receive this type of health care. However, like I said, the sort of light at the end of the tunnel, if you will, is that if these do become finalized over the next couple days, the new administration has said that they would overturn them shortly after taking office. And now back to Lisa for a couple more issue updates.
Great. Thanks, Tracy. I'm going to talk just real briefly about our economic security agenda and some other civil rights issues that we'll be pushing with the new administration and the new Congress. At the top of that list, as mentioned previously by Seth, is pay equity. We certainly want to make sure that we get some new laws in place that help to that actually strengthen current law, but also hopefully create deterrence from employers from discriminating in this method in the first place. There's a bill called the Paycheck Fairness Act that we successfully passed on the House side that has yet to be voted on the Senate side that we will be pushing as far as that goes. There's also the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, and this is obviously a key bill for us as well. This particular bill actually rights the wrong that we believe was done by the Supreme Court in the decision Ledbetter versus Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company. That legislation has also passed the House, but fell short in a test vote on the Senate side. So we are looking at ways to try and either move that legislation together or move it in a way through both the House and the Senate that is most advantageous to getting them passed. We know that the Obama administration really believes that pay equity is an issue and would like to perhaps see that as one of the first bills that they address in the coming Congress. The challenge for us, not just for this issue, but the ones that Tracy mentioned as well, is that as you can imagine, there is a large, rather large line forming of special interest groups, just like AEW, that have a wish list of things that we would like to see addressed. And so part of what's going to be key here is us being forceful enough, politic enough, and strategic enough in terms of how we make those asks and in the way that we work with legislators in the new administration. So pay equity, I think, is definitely at the top of the agenda, and our friend Lilly Ledbetter is definitely a big part of that. We're also going to be doing some work in terms of work-life balance, and this is, I think, a particularly key situation. One of the things that we know, we heard from Tracy, is that while women are doing well in school, we have issues in terms of educational equity, but we still know that women are making some great strides on the education end. But where we're still falling short and facing barriers is not just in the pay equity, but in also in the ways that we're able to manage our work-life balance. Some of that has to do with ways that we could expand the Family and Medical Leave Act. That particular law, I can be very frank with you, would not be here without the work of you, of AEW members across the country, who worked for 15 years to pass that bill. I think that there are ways that we could expand that would be really useful in terms of the number of family members or the type of family members that are affected by it, whether it's paid or unpaid, different conditions covered, all kinds of different things. We also look at the issue of paid sick days as well. Most people are very surprised to hear that half of the workforce today does not have any paid sick days. That's right, no paid sick days whatsoever. As you can imagine, for a mom with kids, that's a huge issue. And so trying to have the kind of flexibility that we need, not only so that they can take paid sick days for themselves so they don't infect the rest of us, but so that they also can take care of their kids as appropriate is really important. Part of the reason why AEW weighed in on that ballot initiative in Milwaukee, and we're very excited that it passed. But we really need to get paid sick days for everybody. Limited amount, an appropriate amount, not something that would be horribly burdensome for business, but enough to make sure that women and dads, for that matter, have the flexibility they need to raise their families and earn a wage. Some other things that we're looking at, obviously, are retirement security. I think that there may be some pension reform work that is done. This is critical because so many women don't either have access to pensions or, of course, their pensions are very small because of the pay equity issue. And AEW obviously cares about Social Security quite a lot. We are against privatizing that system. I will be honest with you, I'm not sure that Social Security is going to rise to the level of some of these other issues moving forward. It certainly is critically important, but I don't know that it's going to be above pay equity or No Child Left Behind or energy or economy issues that the new Congress is going to face. So while I think that it's there and it's certainly on the burner, I would not say it's on the front burner at this moment in time. The other big one that I didn't mention there that certainly is going to be an issue is health care. Health care obviously is a huge, not just health issue for women, but economic security issue for women. We know that right now the cost of health insurance in this country is more than the entire salary of someone who's making the minimum wage. We also know that women are the majority of people on minimum wage, and we also know that since girls can do math, you understand that women are the majority of the uninsured. So part of what we're trying to do in terms of looking at how AUW can weigh in an appropriate way on health care reform is think about the economic impact on women. That's clearly an issue. Again, though, I will say to you, after the bailout that recently happened with Wall Street and the current fiscal conditions, what will happen in terms of health care reform is now much more up in the air than it was even a month ago. I think Mr. Obama certainly has a plan for what he'd like to do for health care, but I don't know that he has the money to do what he'd like to do for health care. AEW will always tell you the truth about that kind of thing, and I think that that financial issue is going to be an impact as to what we can actually achieve. However, that being said, I do think one of the first health care issues that they will look at will be SCHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. That probably is something that they can do. They already have the political will because they this Congress passed it a couple of different times and President Bush vetoed it. So what we might see is some work on the edges in terms of SCHIP as well as Medicare and Medicaid, but not necessarily a whole lot of work in that mushy middle. I hate to say that to you, but as I said, we're going to tell you the truth, and I'm not sure that truthfully, the money is there after a $750 billion bailout that truthfully is actually probably going to cost more than that. Some other things that we would be paying attention to that I know you care about very deeply is judicial nominations. One of the things AEW has always done is weighed in as a moderate voice to make sure that we have judicial nominees that are qualified and that will protect precedents, critical civil rights precedents, so that we don't set back the clock for women and girls. I would not be surprised to see some judicial nominations, especially Supreme Court nominations, coming fairly soon in the Obama tenure. I think that there are especially some more liberal members of the court that are ailing in terms of their personal health that have actually kind of been biding their time for the right person to resign. So you will absolutely see us weighing in on judicial nominations, again, making sure that we're protecting precedents and advancing what we need to in terms of women and girls. The Obama administration, obviously one of the things to keep in mind there in terms of judicial nominations is that he's a former constitutional law professor. So he certainly is going to have a very keen interest in whom he selects to be a Supreme Court justice, as well as for the federal circuit courts and the district courts. But he's also, I think, going to have a very clear philosophy that he's going to stick to. By all accounts, when he talks about who he likes as justices, he talks about people like Mr. Breyer, Justice Breyer, who is a moderate on the bench, more in the middle. And I think that from AUW's perspective, that's a good thing. Lastly, just a few things. There will be a very large civil rights agenda, even beyond the women's rights agenda that we have been outlining. Not the least of which will be AEW's work to improve hate crimes prevention laws, to add gender as, to one of those protected categories. This is long overdue, and it's something that AEW has been taking the lead on for a while. It has passed for the first time in both chambers, both the House and the Senate, in the 110th Congress. Unfortunately, it did not get signed into law, but again, I think what we see there is some political will. We just needed to have a situation where we felt like we had someone in the White House who would sign it. So I would not be surprised to see that bill move pretty quickly. Lastly, there may be a civil rights omnibus bill. When I say omnibus, I mean a big bill with lots of different good ideas in it. Think about the Civil Rights Act from 1964. That was an enormous bill covering lots of different provisions. In the intervening years, there have been legal precedents. There have been efforts that have whittled away at various portions of the law, of various civil rights laws, that I think a lot of civil rights groups, AEW included, would like to see clarified to make sure that the courts are interpreting these laws in the way that Congress really intended. And so there could be a civil rights omnibus bill that basically is a fix-it, technical corrections, if you will, to a variety of different civil rights laws that have had, as I said, that have been undermined in various ways. So I think that that will be on the agenda. As I said, all of these issues between what I've talked about and what Tracy's talked about is very much going to be dependent on the political environment. One of the things that AEW is very keen about is, one, working in a bipartisan fashion, but two, also being fiscally responsible. We believe in the PAYGO system that they have going on Capitol Hill on the House side, whereby if you start a new program, you got to find a way to pay for it and not just borrow the money. And we're going to continue to try and be that particular voice of reason moving forward. We have an agenda, and we have new programs as well as existing programs we'd like to see expanded or improved, but we also need to make sure that we're very clear about the economic times that we're living in and the debts that we're leaving to our grandchildren. So let me stop there and have my good friend Seth here talk about some grassroots things, because moving forward, in order to make this work, we've got to have your voice. We've got to have your collective voice to make this work.
Thanks, Lisa. As field director, it's my role to bring the influence of AAW's membership to bear in our efforts to advance AAW's public policy priorities. I'm so very excited that so many of you have joined us on the conference call this evening. The most important message I want to get across to you is that you are part of a large, effective, nationwide team working together on a common goal. AAW has power that comes from its organized membership. Despite the persistent efforts of AAW's advocates on Capitol Hill, members of Congress will not be moved unless they hear from their constituents, the people who have the power to return them or remove them from office. AAW's greatest resource is you, the organized membership, with an extensive presence throughout the country. We have branches in every state and most congressional districts. That presence can be leveraged into constituent advocacy on AAW's priority issues toward almost any member of Congress. Constituent advocacy opens doors for AAW in Washington. Congressional staffers have often told us that they often hear from AAW members. They have also, by the way, told us that they need to hear from AAW members to support the positions that AAW is urging. I want to tell you a story that illustrates the power that AAW possesses. At National Convention in 2005, which was held here in Washington, D.C., there was a lobby day. During that lobby day, over 300 constituent meetings were held with members of the House of Representatives, and 98 constituent meetings were held with U.S. senators. The two senators and many of the representatives we didn't meet with were offices that declined to schedule a meeting with us. They were not elected officials for whom we lacked constituents in Washington that day. On one day, we had women from each state and over two-thirds of the congressional districts hold meetings with their elected officials. That is what we were able to accomplish just with the women who came to convention that year. I know that we have many branch public policy chairs on the phone this evening. I want to speak directly to the branch public policy chairs for just a minute. You play a critical role in AAW's advocacy. You can educate and mobilize your branch members on our legislative priorities. You'll find that the upcoming AAW legislative agenda for the 111th Congress, our position papers and Action Network emails, are readily available resources for you to use as reading and discussion materials at branch meetings. All of those resources I just mentioned are available on the AAW website. You can plan programming to educate the women in your communities about how matters of public policy affect them, and at election time by turning them out to vote. As AAW moves forward, the public policy and government relations staff will help you in your efforts by providing the technical assistance you need to conduct a voter education and turnout campaign. Educating and turning out women voters demonstrates AAW's power and makes this organization one that elected officials must deal with. You can also act as AAW's representative to your elected official by being a constituent lobbyist for AAW's legislative priorities, by meeting with elected officials such as your U.S. representative or state legislators. The staff here is happy to help you to prepare for such meetings by providing you with position papers and talking points. Our primary tool for mobilizing AAW members to advocate for AAW positions is the Action Network email alert system. All of you should be receiving Action Network alerts. I want to encourage you to take action when you receive one of these emails, and to encourage your AAUW colleagues to do the same. Also, encourage anyone you know who shares our values to subscribe to Action Network. It is open to anyone, members and non-members alike, and it's a great way to introduce someone to AAUW's advocacy. I often hear from branch leaders that there is little to no interest from many of their branch members in being involved in AAUW's advocacy for public policy. Socializing and social networking for women play an important role in keeping AAW's branches together. Many AAW branches have programs and interest groups that play a primarily or exclusively social role. Far from being an impediment to pursuing AAW's mission, social programming enables the pursuit of mission and offers opportunities to build support and involvement in AAW's mission and advocacy. First, you can take advocacy to the social groups. As an example, in the campaign against the anti-affirmative action ballot measure in Nebraska that I spoke about earlier on the call this evening, the branch public policy chair for AAUW of Omaha went to meetings of each of the branch's 24 interest groups to discuss AAUW's position against the ballot measure. also encourage you to plan advocacy events that have a social or social networking component. If women aren't attracted by the issue on the agenda, they might be attracted by the opportunity to interact with their AAUW friends and other women. Finally, I encourage you to plan programming for your branch that lays the groundwork for advocacy by educating and involving AAUW members and the community. Instead of asking your branch members to write letters supporting the Paycheck Fairness Act, you could organize a community wage club, a small group of women who gather to share personal stories related to sex discrimination in the workplace and pay discrimination, and support each other or mentor others as they pursue their careers. Instead of advocating for the high school data bill, your branch could audit gender equity in the school system, in your local school system, using the AAUW publication Signpost, a guide to creating gender-fair schools. You could also hold a book discussion on an AAUW Educational Foundation research report, or use books related to AAUW's public policy positions for reading in your AAW-affiliated book clubs. Now I'm going to hand the call over to Linda, who is going to look at some of the questions we've received.
Thanks, Seth. And again, thank you all for being with us tonight. We're about 45 minutes into the call. We'll take about 15 more minutes for questions. You have emailed some of those questions to us. Again, if you do have anything you want to send to us right at this moment, it is voteredat.aauw.org. That's voteredat.aauw.org. Okay, so we'll start with some of the questions that have come in. One of the first ones, which is kind of an interesting one, is with the new structuring of AAUW in the works, how will your roles as public policy and government relations staff change?
That's a really good question, Linda, and I think what I'd like to do in terms of answering it is reassure people that AUW's public policy program and advocacy activities will be stronger than ever under one AUW. Part of what is happening as they look at the restructuring and you all look at the bylaws is that it's very clear that we will keep both a 501c3, which is the foundation, and a small pocket of the C4 for us to be able to do our advocacy activities. The reality is, though, I'll be very honest with you, is that a lot of the advocacy work that AUW does is 501c3 nonprofit in nature. So we're actually going to be, I think, standing in very good stead because now we'll actually also be able to go after grants and donations that people will be able to get tax deductions for to do our advocacy work. There are a few components of our work that are absolutely C4 in nature and will remain so. Those include our voter guides and our congressional voting record. But the truth of the matter is this particular issue has been looked at very carefully as far as the restructuring goes, and I'm very confident in telling you that we will come out the better for it. I think it's going to be a good situation for us.
Great, thanks. Another question here, what aspect of AAUW's agenda would you recommend be emphasized in extremely conservative areas of the country?
You know, that's a great question because I think one of the strong points of AAUW is that we are not a bi-coastal organization. We do not simply have members on the East Coast and the West Coast, although we have great members on both coasts. But we also have a very strong membership in the middle of the country. That is a strength for us when we go up on Capitol Hill because we have members, as Seth mentioned, in every congressional district. We have branches throughout the country. We have members, our coalition partners, who will ask us, who's got someone in Idaho or who's got someone in Wyoming or Montana that could talk to their member of Congress, and AUW is the one at the table that can raise their hand. So it gives us enormous strength that we have Republicans, Democrats, and Independents as members, and that we have a truly nationwide membership. In terms of issues that are good to work on, clearly education is always a good issue in terms of advancing opportunities, making higher education more accessible. The higher ed bill, yes, was passed in this Congress, but we're going to have a lot of work to do to make sure that we have enough funding for Pell Grants to make sure that students can go to college. I think that's a key issue. There are other issues that could come up. Certainly, healthcare is often a place where we can find some common ground. things with children, child care. I know the Idaho folks have been doing some great work on statewide child care regulations, and it's been a wonderful fit for them and for their membership, and they've been doing an excellent job on it. So I would look at the public policy program and see where you can find that common ground. Sometimes what you can do as a branch or as a state is come up with your own mini version of the public policy program for the things that you know you're going to concentrate on and work on. The beauty of that member-adopted document is that you get to choose on there the things that you'll work on. Certainly you'll get guidance from us at the national level when we really need your voice on specific issues and when we really need you to act collectively. But it gives you the opportunity to focus on some local issues in a way that is helpful.
The field staff will continue to support our member leaders. That will not change. You're as important as ever. I think my comments earlier, I hope, reinforced that. AEW's strength in our advocacy comes from our membership and in particular from the organization. The fact that there are so many communities in this country with an AEW branch. And in many cases, those branches are very high profile because of the programming they do. Even if the programming is a large book sale, that means elected officials know who AEW is, know that AEW is part of their constituency and influential in their constituency. And that means when you do advocacy, your advocacy, the impact is amplified by your organized presence and your profile. And we will certainly continue to support our member leaders at the local level in their advocacy.
Great, thanks. A couple of questions from California here. President Bush is going ahead with his important meeting with the economics ministers from Europe and Asia. Will President-elect Obama be a part of this meeting so that it is to be a meeting not wasted on a lame duck president?
Well, the reality is under our Constitution, George W. Bush will be president until noon on January 20th. January 20th, 2009. So, yes, he is lame duck, but he still has all the constitutional rights vested in him and the right, obviously, the responsibility, in fact, to represent this country. What does change in this interim period, in the next 75 days while the transition is happening and being prepared for, I guess, is that Senator Obama, for instance, today received his first intelligence briefing. As a candidate, both he and McCain received kind of modified foreign intelligence briefings. But now that he is actually the president-elect, he will receive the same briefing that George W. Bush does as a way, again, of preparing for the transition. George W. Bush is going to go to this meeting in Europe. He is not going to bring as a sidekick Senator Obama. isn't how it's done. But rest assured that there are already things in place that have happened every time that we have this remarkable, democratic, peaceful transition that we have called presidential elections that are in place to ensure that Senator Obama is boning up on what he needs to know for his role come January 20th.
Okay, we have about four more questions here, so let's keep these a little shorter in response. What has AUW determined that the president-elect should tackle in order in his first days in office?
Oh, that's an easy one. The first thing we really wanted to do is pay equity. We think pay equity legislation should be much like Bill Clinton did family and medical leave within the first month of office. We think that he could do the same thing in terms of pay equity. So that's what we'll be asking for, that's what we'll be pushing for, and we will absolutely be looking for your help to make that happen.
Great. A question from Pennsylvania here. Based on our figures of voter demographics in this election, with youth outpacing seniors 18% to 16%, what ideas are under consideration for tapping into this newfound interest in political action by the younger generation, and how might this tie into AAUW membership?
You know what, I'm going to pass that one to our field director because our e-advocacy programs, as well as some other things happening here at AAUW, I think are really going to be tailor-made for that, but the e-advocacy piece in particular. Seth?
Yeah, certainly we have our e-advocacy program to involve the millennial generation, who've shown themselves to be very politically active. I think there's a role for millennials in AEW, and everything we know about them is they've expressed a very high interest in being involved and being personally involved. And so you should reach out to millennials in your community and invite them into your branch. They have a different way of being involved. I should warn you. They are not so likely to want to take on a formal leadership position. What seems to work with the millennial generation is to ask them to take on a finite project that they can work on that has a beginning and an end, that lasts a defined period of time. And I think you'll discover that they'll be a great asset to your branch.
And in fact, public policy programming might be a good way to start attracting some of those millennials. We do know that they're interested in those topics, and you could take advantage of it.
And we saw some of them here today for our Lobby Corps open house, and I was really delighted to see some of the younger generation that came to just find out more about our Lobby Corps. So those are all great ideas. Here's a question from Arlington, Virginia. Will any of the regulations that the Bush administration seeks to put in place before leaving town adversely affect our issues?
They definitely will. There's actually fear of a number of regulations being issued really within anything from tomorrow morning to the next couple sort of weeks and months here. We have a couple things in the pipeline that we're actually sort of everyone's waiting on them to finalize. The general process is that the administration, the different departments, propose regulations. They have a comment period that's usually 60 days, sometimes only 30. Groups such as AUW, even members of the general public can submit comments, and then the regulations are finalized by the department, whatever department issues them. So two in particular that we're waiting to be finalized are Family Medical Leave Act proposed regulations. In general, AUW did not support the proposed regulations. Sort of big picture is that they would make it harder for people to actually use the Family Medical Leave Act. A lot of paperwork is involved with these proposed regulations. In general, the proposed regulations were sort of what we would expect to see from the Bush administration. In general, they do not line up with AUW's priorities of making family medical leave paid for, expanding it, those sorts of things. The proposed regulations would weaken the act. And then in addition, we have the Health and Human Service regulations regarding reproductive health that have been proposed. The comment period was actually shorter from normal 60 days. It was only 30. One of the fears is that that was actually done so that the administration would be able to issue final regulations before they leave town here on January 20th. There was an article just today about sort of waiting for these to come out. Everyone's sort of walking on eggshells, if you will. We have our fingers crossed that they won't be finalized, but we're also fearful that they will be. As I mentioned, these regulations would really essentially allow any staff member at a family planning clinic to refuse to provide any health care services, including just information, birth control, you name it. We really don't know what the impact of these would be in terms of would health centers fire people, how far would they go, would they just stop providing services. However, we do know that Obama is not supportive of these regulations and has even said that he would if they are finalized, he would overturn them right away.
Okay, thanks, Tracy. Question from Nebraska. With the huge number of Electoral College votes going to Obama versus McCain, despite a much closer vote by the people, do you expect the Republicans in general to become a bit more moderate? At least it seems the far-right stance on some issues, along with current issues such as economy and the war, appears to be substantial with the Republican downfall.
You know, I think that's an excellent question. Truthfully, what I think is going to be happening is not so much that the Republicans are going to be moderating themselves. If you ask me to look in my crystal ball, I'd say the Democrats are going to be moderating themselves. The Blue Dog Coalition on the House side, which is the fiscally and socially conservative Democrats, the folks who have been elected very much fit that persuasion. I think that, you know, a lot of people like to talk about Nancy Pelosi being a San Francisco Democrat, a liberal progressive. At the same time, she's the Speaker for the full House and has already said that she expects us to be a more fiscally conservative and a more socially conservative Democratic majority. I think that what you need to especially remember on the House side is that they're already running for re-election. They started running for re-election yesterday. And so they're already worried about that, and in such we'll have some tangles with the new president. They may be from the same party, but they, you know, once it comes down to election time, it's every man for themselves. There are no choir boys in politics, as I keep saying, and so part of what's going to happen is, while you'll see the Senate, the House, and the president working together on issues, you're also going to see some of that old triangulation coming back. And them duking it out, being very clear about the separation of powers and that they are co-equal branches of government, and going from there. So I actually think on the Republican side, a lot of the moderates got beat. Chris Shays, moderate Republican from Connecticut, good friend to AEW, 100% voting record with us, got beat. He was the last Republican on the House side in the Northeast. Gordon Smith, senator from Oregon, also a voice of moderation and civility in the Senate, got beat, just announced today. So what we have left on the Republican side is a much more cohesive and conservative faction versus what you have on the Democratic side, which is a much more diverse group of folks, with everybody from, you know, very liberal folks like Maxine Waters to very conservative folks like Jean Taylor. And that's just, they're going to have to herd those cats and see what they can make of it.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa, very much. And thank you, Tracy and Seth. Thank you very much for your work and for everything that we talked about tonight. And thank you all on the conference call for joining us. I am sorry that we had some of these issues, connectivity issues in early on. That was our conference call company that was giving us difficulties, but we have recorded this call, and it will be posted, and so you can respond to it. Also, just quickly, you will receive an email from us with a simple evaluation survey. This will be done tomorrow. We would appreciate it if you would give us your feedback. Someone did ask about whether we would have a synopsis of this on the Internet. We will, in about 2 weeks, be publishing our legislative agenda for the 111th Congress, so we will let you know when that is published. We hope tonight's call has not only been informative, but that it will serve to inspire and guide your advocacy efforts moving forward. AAUW can be a force to be reckoned with when we speak with one voice on the issues that move our mission forward. Let's keep working to harness that power and break through even more barriers for women and girls. Thank you, and good night.
Recording has been paused.